Let's start with takeaways. What was your biggest takeaway from the last session? Who would like to go first? Okay, Beverly, then Chris. No, 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 we're going to have everybody share. This is after lunch. Yes.
Okay, well, I feel really silly.
Wait, we need a microphone. And please do not feel silly. But please also stand up and so we can see you and hear you.
Okay. Okay. Well, I don't feel silly. You said it. I've said it all for a long time. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care about them. Mm-hmm. And I have an ongoing sense of frustration of caring deeply about certain issues in people's lives and feeling like people want to go to someone else for the solution. And I think, but I'm nice and I know the answer, you know, whatever. But it occurs to me, because of my personality, and I don't mean that as an excuse, but it helps me to understand, I'm not an emotive person. I'm not a touchy-feely person. I show my affection and my love by serving people. But those who don't, that's not their love language. They don't perceive my service as speaking love to them, so they don't know that I care. I'm not doing a good job of articulating this. Anyway, it was good to hear. People don't care how much you know. What am I doing? I mean, I'm just... Do you want me to continue? Okay. Anyway. There you go. You're frowning, but it's profound up here.
No, I was frowning at the AV. Hold the mic a little higher. Put your hand a little higher on it and see if that helps.
Okay. No, it's still... I mean, you hear me better, but...
Hey, are they doing something next door? Or?
It sounds like a siren outside.
Oh. It's an Amber Alert.
Oh, that's an Amber Alert?
Yeah, just the siren sound is an Amber Alert.
No, it's...
That's
yeah.
That's what I've been having on my phone.
Hey, Andy,
yeah, go ahead.
Let's eliminate this room by just turn the master off on the audio and just see if it's in here. Sounds like it's outside.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's probably a fire alarm, and they're just a little bit early because how to deal with interruptions, including AV issues, contradictory audience members, and other interruptions is later in the program. Y'all are early. Okay. I'm so sorry about that. Okay. I know that you don't want to stand up and repeat it, so let me see if I got this straight. Okay. You care about them, but they don't know how much you care about them.
And I recognize now I need to figure out ways to be me and to communicate to them that I do.
Yes. Yeah. So that is a big, huge takeaway, because if I care about you and you don't know that, I need to be able to demonstrate that somehow. Mm-hmm. Okay? So maybe what I could do is... give you a couple of kisses to show you, right? So, just an example. Oh, I'm speaking your language. Okay, good. Chris.
Takeaway was testimonials are so important because it validates the solution you are offering.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if there's one... Is that a like
Amber
a real tornado or?
No, it's
so for like
Amber
the 11th
alert.
Time, it's an Amber Alert.
It is an Amber yeah. Alert. I thought that just comes on your phone.
Continuation from last night. The child was abducted last night.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Yes. So, believe it or not, I think that that's one of my... I don't think most people would probably say this, but... internally, with my marketing, I should probably take more advantage of that tool, because we have so many phenomenal testimonials. I'm going to let everybody share. It's after lunch. I want everybody to share. Anita, what was your biggest takeaway from the last session or from the day so far?
My biggest takeaway was that I have connected with my real passion in life, and it's extremely exciting, and it's just the inside.
Perfect.
Explosion.
Awesome. Great. Yay. Oh, we have it. Let's clap for this table. Okay. I'm going to share with you how to keep your audiences awake, too, today. Michelle automatically gave it to you. Michelle was sharing at lunch. She was speaking at a church one time, and there was a lady in the front row who was about 100 who fell asleep and literally fell out of her chair while she was speaking. I know. That's what I said.
There's so many takeaways. I'll share this one, that it doesn't matter if you're using StoryBrand, Ziglar Goal Setting, Sound of Music, or Mind Mapping. There's lots of tools to get you where you want to go. And you can take little bits and pieces from all of them. But the bottom line is that there's no shortage of tools.
Right. That's right. Excellent. Yeah. And the thing is that the most important thing is that you have a map, right? You know where you're going. You know where you want to end up. You want to land the plane, right? And how do we take off? What are some of the tools and controls in flight? And then how do we land it? Yes, ma'am.
I think my greatest takeaway is something about it has relaxed me now. So I don't think I'd be nervous at all. It's okay to tell some of my stories. And it's going to relate to people and what they're needing. And so I think that's just great. It's like gave me permission to just be me.
That is so huge. Excellent. Awesome. I feel like I want to clap, but we didn't clap for Sherry yet.
Clap for both of them.
I'm not going to take it personally.
We're going to clap. Well, I clap for the table over here. I was trying to be fair, but equitable.
Listen, everybody didn't get a trophy in the inner circle.
Amen, girlfriend. Okay. And if anybody deserves a hand clap, it's Sherry Perry.
Yeah.
Right? Stop, but keep going.
Stop. Go ahead.
I've had a couple of takeaways. First, I loved how we started out about landing the plane. I thought, just learning how to land the plane. Mm-hmm. I can get it. I can fly it, but landing is awesome. Being authentic.
Yes.
And vulnerable. That was a big takeaway. And then the power of story. I love I think you said it was John Maxwell or somebody said, he tells a story every 11 minutes or
Zig Ziglar
said that. So, so now I can just feel comfortable telling my story.
Yeah.
Stories or whatever. So it's perfect. So those were my takeaways.
I want to build on something that you just said here in just a second. This is important. I may not have it in here. I think I had it in there. I might have taken it out. But anyway, we'll get there. Yes, sir.
So take your packets and go to page slide 19. Everything that everyone else is talking about, but in
call
here
call to action.
Yep, on slide 19
wow. Okay.
Gives you the preparation and the framework. And so you've got to be able to put in the preparation. What's the room look like? What's the audience? And you've got these questions on here that help you really set yourself up for success, because you'll never land the plane if you can't get it off the ground. You run out of fuel and in flight. I'm an aviator, so this all just speaks right to me with the landing the plane things. But you got to know where you're going. And then this helps with all those little things that are along the route.
Right.
It's just maintaining from concept to completion. And that little list right there is a process. That's beautiful to start out with. And so we're here to learn processes, procedures, tactics, techniques, procedures. So
yay. Love it.
Plus what everybody else says.
Big hand clap for this whole table. All right. One thing that I didn't emphasize enough, thank you for sharing this, is your story. Almost every Zig Ziglar presentation that I have heard, at some point in time, he will reference his story being from the second poorest family in Yazoo City, Mississippi, during the Depression. Now, if you think about where he started and where he ended up, wow. So your story is in that guide space. It's also in that credibility space. And people can identify, right? Because if you're highly successful and they see you on the stage and they go, that's not me. I could never do that. But then they find out what you've been through. They find out where you're from. They find out your story. They can identify. In fact, Mr. Ziegler even used to say, I probably walked in your shoes, with the exception of, you know, there was one or two things that had not happened to him. Yes, ma'am.
When he wrote the book, Embrace the Struggle with Julie, that was one of the comments he made right in the very beginning of the book. He said people would talk to me and go, well, you're successful. They put him up on such a high pedestal.
Yeah.
But when he had the accident and wrote that book, Embrace the Struggle, with his daughter, he said, I had a whole new audience that I didn't have before, and he really, really enjoyed that. It's in the opening chapter of that book.
Yeah. People can identify with struggle and success that you had. Hey, it's great that you're successful, but where did you come from? I learned that, and I don't retell that story in this room because you guys are, you know, members, and you've heard it a million times. And I even, if I invite a new audience in, like I did on Tuesday, I had a new audience. Once in a while, we invite people to our webcast when we're starting a series, because this is session one, and we want them to get enrolled in Inner Circle and, you know, be in the whole series, everything. So I have to tell my story. And so as I'm telling it, I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's Inner Circle members on here that have been here for 10 years that have probably heard this story 10,000 times, you know. But you got to do it because, you know, I mean, the truth is that one of the challenges I have had is we're going to talk about, you know, what to wear. I have always worn a sport coat. For two reasons. One is, I want to look professional. I want people to take me seriously. Second, I always had my brochures and all of my materials. I have plenty of space inside. You don't know, you don't see it coming, you know. The kisses don't fit that well, but I'll find, you know, something for them. But, you know, like, you got a card? I got a card. I got a mini book. Okay, a little mini book right there. And, you know, anyway, true story, when I was going to these little networking groups, when I first started my service company, these guys had a serious case of stinking thinking, needed a checkup from the neck up, complaining about the economy, complaining about customers. This was 30 years ago. Over 30 years ago, hadn't shaved, like cut off blue jeans and a t-shirt, flip-flops. These are business owners, all right? And like, it's Monday morning. Let's get to work here. So I walk in with a sport coat. I had this big old briefcase. I had a CPA, an auditor's briefcase, you know, one of those big things about that wide. Because I could put my laptop in there. I could put my files in there. I could put my lunch in there. So, like, I was a mobile office. If I stopped for lunch, I could pop that thing open, get some work done. If we're working at a building or a home or something that's, you know, not furnished, that's when I'm writing my systems. I mean, I show up Monday morning at this networking group with these guys, these contractors. I've already made three or four referral marketing stops and dropped off four dozen donuts already. And I walk in the door and these guys are, you know, complaining about, you know, whining. And I come in with a positive attitude, carrying a briefcase. I wore a tie back then too. They literally laughed at me and said, "Who do you think you are, Zig Ziglar or somebody?" I had never met Zig Ziglar in my whole life at that point in time. I didn't meet him until 5 years later. Those guys were speaking prophecy and they didn't know it. When I became the very first Ziglar Legacy certified trainer, I helped Tom conceive it, put it together, and all that. So I got to not only be the very first one at class one, but I got to teach my business building strategy, because at that time, most of the people who were joining ZLC were business owners. Wearing a tie, got a fresh tan, nice suit, pearly whites. And somebody, I won't mention any names, but Sherry Perry, didn't like me.
Really?
Really. She literally called Tom Ziglar and said, "Where'd you find this guy?" 6 months later, she came back to help, and I'm still there, because Tom never said anything to me about it. I'm still there. And Sherry Perry's words, which you got to know, you got to understand that Sherry Perry is like my greatest advocate. I mean, serves the Inner Circle community like no one else does. Her words, somehow Howard had changed.
Well, you know that this particular was so very important to us and our family.
I know
and
that.
I feel,
yeah.
I just felt very passionate.
Very passionate, protective of the Ziglar.
Protective of Mr. Ziglar and his family and what he's meant for our family. And I think you did change a little
bit. I did change.
But yeah. I also think that I changed, and it has everything to do with being around the right people. But you were a salesman in that room that day.
Yeah, because that day I was eager. I wanted to impress everybody in that room. Probably tried a little too hard, right? But now, all these years later, 12 years later, whatever it is, 10 years later.
I think we see those three words now more than ever: prepare, care, and share. I think that's what you embody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So bad.
AC Lockyer, one of my biggest referral sources. I have spoken at, I don't know how many of you guys' conventions. He saw me speak at this big convention, and he told me later on, he said, "I wasn't an instant believer." He said, because he thought to himself, "This guy is too tan. He probably doesn't work. And a little too slick. I don't know." So when he literally sat me down at a round table like this, there were four people there. AC, and I had already heard enough about him to know that he was like the patriarch of the soft wash movement. So he's like the godfather, you know, the whole industry. And I'm sitting here at this table being interviewed by four people, you know. And so anyway, but I haven't changed the way I dress, except that I lost a tie. Even though at some point in time I could probably show up in my bathing suit and my flip-flops and be okay, right? Because, you know, if like, who's the let's say if President Bush W, who lives here in Dallas, if he showed up here right now, would you care what he's wearing?
He'd be shocked if he was in his
face. But you wouldn't care, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That'll tweet. W in his bathing suit. Whoa. Y'all should be here. Dress professionally. Even if people laugh at you. Because in some rooms, people are going to laugh at you. They're going to say, and the worst thing that speakers do, presenters do, They dress down to the audience. I mean, people dress so poorly today. And that's one of the things that you want to pay attention to. One thing is what I call universal appeal. In other words, when things have changed some today, but over your lifetime, over the last 20, 30 years, people used to get their information from the news, right? The evening news. What do the newscasters wear? Yeah, a suit and a tie, right? What do politicians wear? And women, usually a dress or a pantsuit or whatever, right? Now, if you're in a specific niche, let's say that you're in the biker niche, if I never spoke to a bunch of bikers, but if I did, I'd probably lose all this. Yeah, I mean, I'd probably, you know, if I was going to speak at the rodeo, I'd probably buy a pair of boots and a hat. I don't even own a pair of boots or a hat, you know. I think I told you guys about Bubba, right? Now, Bubba became highly requested. One Halloween, one of my referral sources said, hey, we're having a Halloween party. Happens to be on Friday. That's when we have our company meeting. Could Bubba show up? I'm like, Bubba's retired. But they were a big referral source, so Bubba showed up. So once in a while at our conferences back then, because we wanted to demonstrate, don't be Bubba, dress up as Bubba at my conferences. And, of course, the family grew. We had Bubba Jr., which was Jim Bardwell, and we're having a conference in Destin one time. Rick Jones, talk about Mr. Professional, always going to have a sport coat on. Dale Carnegie, stand up, address the audience, put a little force behind the voice. You know, there's a technique to everything. Is doing like one of the very first presentations he's ever done for one of my groups. And Bubba Jr. goes into the wrong room. Rick Jones is in the middle of his presentation. And Jim is supposed to interrupt what's going on, but he's supposed to interrupt in that room over there. So when Mr. Jones said, sir, you're in the wrong room, oh, no, I'm not. I'm in the room I'm supposed to be in. What you talking about? How y'all doing today? And he's like, could you see Rick Jones' face? Like, I was like, you did what? My service company became the model for that industry. I could say without hesitation that that company has been successful by every measure possible and a model for high-end residential cleaning and care for Oriental rugs, natural stone floors, for some of Houston's most prominent citizens, celebrities, world leaders, names you would recognize. George and Barbara Bush were clients of ours before they passed away. And we did that by being professional, dressing professional. And when I was out networking, I always wore a sport coat and a tie. So our company is kind of like the Willy Wonka chocolate factory of the cleaning industry. Because when you go there, people are just like, if they're in the industry, compared to what they have and what they've seen, right? So we were brainstorming. There was a conference coming up, and we were brainstorming how to put this fundraiser together. They had a fundraiser, and we were going to give away some stuff, and we're brainstorming on what to do. And I said, why don't we give away golden tickets to come on a tour of our company. We'll give away golden tickets, kind of like the Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory. 15 minutes later, while we're still on the group Zoom meeting, I get an alert on my phone. Gene Wilder, the original Willy Wonka, has passed away. I'm like, did I do that? God, I'm sorry if I did that. I mean, it was just uncanny. So I went to Las Vegas. I went to Party City. I got to pull up these. I meant to get these. I just didn't have enough time. I don't even know where it is. But I went to Party City and got myself an outfit. I mean, a glitter top hat, Elton John glasses, a big old clown bow tie, and I had this white suit. And I appeared at this conference as Willy Wonka. And everybody and their brother wanted a picture with me. Okay? Ask Bruce and Joanne about it. They were with me. I got a picture with them. And at the time, the two young ladies that were working with me at the time, they had these red dresses on. So they were the, what do you call it? The Oompa Loompas? What do you call it? Yeah. I mean, we had this whole thing going. Gave away a bunch of money, gave away. So, you know, whatever the occasion calls for. Yesterday was Halloween, and I saw a picture of Russell Ibarra, owner of Gringo's. He posted a picture in, like, a phenomenal Elvis suit, like the Aloha suit. And I was like, where'd you get that suit? He said, I bought it from the same place that made Elvis's costumes, made Elvis's suits. I said, can you send me the link? He said, yeah. So I went on there, and I found myself an Elvis suit. I said, would you appear on the stage in your Elvis suit with me if I have one on, if we raise some money for Camp Hope? Absolutely.
Sweet.
So.
You going to sing?
Yes, I'm going to sing.
Will you go to Vegas and do the flying Elvises?
I don't know what that is, but probably.
They jump out of the plane.
No. So whatever's required. So Camp Hope, the book that I'm writing for Russell, all the proceeds are going to go to Camp Hope, which is... place for veterans who are suffering from PTSD. And they take care of these guys. We get to do all this because of them. So they have raised over $1 million for Camp Hope in Houston. So my idea is, give me an Elvis suit, and Russell and I, the book is going to come out in June, so maybe the May conference, Russell and I will have an evening, invite Michael Berry, is going to do the forward to the book, and get Michael Berry to show up, and we'll sell tickets. Then we'll raise money by doing some karaoke Elvis style. All right? So if the costume is required, that's what you wear. So in other words, dress to the occasion. You know, the other thing is that how well do we know each other? See, I could, like in Destin, I wear my beach shorts, my sandals, t-shirt, we're at the beach, we know each other. You know, that's different. Other question is, what is your position? This is Andy Andrews, and Andy Andrews has been so successful writing books. He's like the modern day Mark Twain. He can wear whatever he wants to wear. He shows up in a pair of jeans, tennis shoes, and he actually has a long sleeve shirt on right here. Okay? So the question is, what is your position? President Bush can show up however he wants to. Now, the next question is, what position do you want? I don't think W wants to be walking around having people tweet out pictures of him in a bathing suit, because he probably has skinny legs, you know, and probably just what, you know, that's not the position. That's not the position that he wants to take up. That's not the image that he wants to project. So I wanted to project an image of professionalism. Maybe in that industry I overdressed. So I always wore a tie in the cleaning industry. And I got a reputation. There was a fire alarm one time, and you know, I still had my suit on. Everybody else was like, you know, I was already up and dressed. You know, it was, I don't know, like 5 a.m. or everybody's, you know, some people like wrapped up in their sheet, you know, at the hotel. And like, I was in my suit already, and they're like, you sleep in that thing? I lost my ties during COVID, and I thought, I like this. In fact, after COVID, I didn't even want to put on shoes, but that's another story. All right. When you tell a story, I hired a consultant. I put in so much work into that Power Community book. I had a consultant before I spent several months writing the thing. I had a consultant to help me figure out the framework of the book. And her word was paintbrush, because they would interview me for like 2 hours every week for several weeks. I don't know, it was a couple months or something like that. And they would ask me about this or ask me about that. I'd start telling the story. I am more of a reporter style. Like, I'll tell you what happened. This happened, then this happened, this happened. She's like, stop, wait. Bring me into the scene. And she used the word paintbrush. Like, show me the scene. You know, when you read a good book or somebody tells you a great story, they put you in that scene, right? You can, I mean, like when I was sharing the story about this kid right here, you were in the room, weren't you? I had to learn that. And there is no good story without tension. There's got to be a cliffhanger. What's going to happen? What happens next? How does Maria get out of trouble? How do they get out of this trap? How did Zig Ziglar get out of poverty? And how did he become who he became? So there has to be tension. Dr. Nathaniel Hearn, lots of tension there. Being poor, being black, being in a racist environment, a school with holes in his pants and in his shirt, in his sleeves, and holes in his shoes. They wore cardboard when it was closed. We put cardboard in their shoes when it was cold outside, because their shoes had holes in them. Tension. How do you get out of that? What's the resolution? And so you want to create emotion, is the idea. You're not telling an effective story if there's not some emotion. I shared with you earlier, Winston Churchill said, If you're not, if a leader moved himself, he's not going to move other people. Next thing is, you got to own the room. You got to own the room. Even if it's not your room. I was speaking for Tommy Mello at a thing he does called Vertical Track. And it was in Arizona. I attended the conference the first day. Everything was great. I'm up the next day. And they had, like, in the hallway, they had, like, you know, trade show booths and everything. You know how they'll have trade show booths outside the conference room. Then you go in the conference room. That's where your, you know, the speakers are and everything. And that morning, when I walked into that building, it's like the AC had been off all night. It was like walking into a sauna. Now, I had the phenomenal talk with more than one of the people who are working there. So that's very important, is that your job is to make friends with whoever's controlling the environment here. And I think I mentioned to you that I read a book called Get Paid to Speak? So when I was preparing for this, I was in Destin this past summer. And as I was preparing for this, and again, I wrote a whole outline, and I just write everything I think of. I put it in a notes app. I put it in my notebook, and every time I have an idea, I just throw it in that notes app, put it in the notebook, and you know, and so I have piles of notebooks, and then I go back through, put it in the computer, then build the framework, and then put it all into PowerPoint, right, like this. And I was in Nashville, and Toastmasters had their annual conference there, and I was speaking at another conference. And I walked by this room, and they had a bunch of, you know, tables and stuff, and there was these books on it called Get Paid. One of them, I think it was called Get Paid to Speak. And I was like, this might be a good book to have. I love books, and like, I'm just, you know, I don't care what it is. If it's about business or something that I'm interested in, I'm gonna pick it up. Well, it was free. I was like, do I have to pay for this? They were like, no, they're free. Okay, good. So I'm like, okay, I got this day coming up. There might be something in this book that could be helpful for today. So I read the whole thing, cover to cover. And one of the things that the guy said in there is that when he goes to speak, he has like some, he takes like bulk candy with him, like, you know, like you get at Walmart for Halloween, like Hershey bars, Mr. Good bars, you know, whatever. And so I emailed, and he gives it to the AV people, you know, like I have the phenomenal talk with him, maybe give him a phenomenal bracelet, but he gives him, you know, candies. I thought that's a great idea. So I messaged Jim Turnell, and I was like, hey, can you get me some branded candies? He said, we got Kisses. That's where these came from. That little idea from that book, and then Jim Turnell showing me that, telling me that he could brand Kisses for me, Hershey's, and I was like, that's good. I can build on that. By the way, they have hugs too. Did you know that? Hershey's has hugs. They're like white and brown. And so that's how the Kisses came about, is from that book. The point is that if you make friends with the AV people, you make friends with the catering people, especially if you have the phenomenal talk with them or give them a kiss or two, then whatever you need, you got. So this young lady that was serving the tables, you got this big hallway with all the trade show booths in it. Then you got the conference room. I'm going to be up there in about an hour. We got an hour to cool this place down. There's nobody around from Tommy Mello's crew. They're all doing something else. I don't remember what her name is now, but let's just say Suzanne. I was like, Suzanne, how you doing? Well, I'm doing phenomenal, Mr. Partridge. How you doing? I said, I'm phenomenal, but I need some help. Anything for you, what you need. I said, this room, we got to get it cool, and we got to get it cool now. Done. Own the room, even if it's not your room. Whatever needs to be done. You got to ask for permission if it's something that you're going to really, you know, switch up. But, you know, if the room isn't set and ready for you, if it needs to be vacuumed, if there's trash, if there's, you know, take initiative. Because that affects you. That affects your presentation. AV, what about the seating? You might want to change the seating around. You might want to you might want a different setup. You want to know that as early as possible and get people involved. So inspect the space and take action. All right, let's go back to interruptions. What happens if the electricity goes out? I got a backup right here. If the projectors go out, I still got my laptop, right? You guys have handouts. I know my content. If the microphone goes out, maybe I have to gather people a little closer. If it's a big room, maybe I got to get them in. I mean, do whatever you got to do, right? One of the things I learned along the way, just another one of those little nuggets. I worked for a guy, or I used to speak for a guy, he used to hire me for the World Floor Covering Association. He was the director of education. Harry Perdue was his name, is his name. I guess he's still around. I was speaking for him in a room about this size, maybe even a little smaller, like let's say maybe just this space right here. And I said, I don't need a mic. He said to me, and this is a guy who books speakers. He's a speaker himself. His wife has a speakers bureau. He's had a lot of experience in this space. He said, Howard, always use a mic. Always. If it's available, always use a mic. Don't say, because the room is small, don't say, oh, I don't need a mic. For a couple reasons. One is there's things that you can do with a microphone. You know what I mean? Thank you very much. Thank you. Treat me like a fool. See, you got to pay to hear me sing Bad Elvis. See, I'm going to be Bad Elvis. That's what my, you know. Bad singer Elvis. I'm going to lip sync. How about that? That's a good. Thank you, dear. That's a really good idea. There is a video out there somewhere that my family has somewhere where I wore an Elvis suit and a wig. And I didn't have rings, so we made rings out of aluminum foil. It was my brother's 60th birthday party, and they said, we're going to do karaoke, so everybody had a character, and they didn't ask me. They said, you are going to be Elvis, and we already got you a suit. It wasn't a fancy suit like the one I'm probably going to get, the one that Russell had, but it was a white suit, Elvis suit, had a wig. And the costume jewelry made out of aluminum foil. And I literally did sing Hound Dog. I'm not going to do it today unless we raise a lot of money. But I think lip sync would probably be better. I got the moves. That's no problem. And how'd we get on that subject? Got to land the plane. We got back on the costumes. So this is what you do. Oh yeah, because you can do things with it. Thank you. Thank you very much. You're a wonderful audience. Beautiful audience. Thank you very much. The other thing is, if you're doing like a half-day training or an all-day training, or you're at some event where you're going to be talking to people all the time, it'll save your voice. Without a demonstration, it's just a conversation. So now you can hear me okay, but if I have to keep this volume up all day to make sure that I'm reaching Austin back there, and by the way, you're talking to the back of the room. You're talking to the last person in the audience. That's who you're talking to.
And the camera can't hear you.
Okay, for those of you that couldn't hear me, I was demonstrating what happens when you don't have a microphone on. Because a presentation without a demonstration is just a conversation. That's why we're going to have Austin demonstrate some moves from Tang Su Yo, no, Tang Su Do. I got to get my word pictures. Okay, you know how you remember stuff, right? Word pictures. Tang, remember Tang, the astronaut's orange juice from back in the day? Su means you in Spanish, or yours in Spanish, maybe. Or maybe a girl named Sue. I don't know. So you got Tang, you got Sue. And dough, lots of money. So Sue's walking around with some Tang and a whole lot of dough, you know what I mean? So that's one of the ways that you remember things. See, now I got it. Tang Su Dough. We're going to have a demonstration of how that works. From Mr. Austin Grogan here in a few minutes. Yay. Okay. So always use a mic. Fire alarm. I mean, what if we had to leave this building a second ago when that alarm went off? What if the alarm was in here and we had to leave? One time I was doing a conference and, you know, we do a tour of our company early in the morning. Bus leaves at 6:30, so you got to be downstairs at 6:15. So we're having a conference. Fire alarm goes off at like 5:45. Everybody out. Well, the people that are going on the tourists have grabbed some clothes and get on the bus because the bus is leaving, right? They're already probably, up, maybe not completely ready. And when people started streaming back in, they're like, way to go, Howard. Way to go. It's like, what? What did I do? Have them set off a fire alarm at 5:45? Brilliant. I didn't do it, but if I could have, maybe I would have. I don't know. Okay, what do you do about people? So fire alarm, something like that. Listen, you just need to be prepared to adjust. Do we need to go a little longer? Do we need to cut lunch down a little bit? You know, do we need to, where can we pick up the time? Maybe I can pick up the pace, not tell as many stories. And we're all in on it together, right?
And you also have to take a page out of today's, ridiculousness at concerts and stuff. You do have to show empathy from the front of the room and take immediate action if there is something dramatic that happens. Because, earlier this year, that whole ridiculousness had happened.
Oh, yeah, in Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a concert and a bunch of people got stampeded, pushing to the front. Okay, what do you do about people talking to each other? Tell them to quit it? Very good. That's a great technique. Yeah. Depends on how well you know them, but you might just walk over there and You know, we're talking about people talking, and I'm standing this close to you, you're going to be like, and then I walk away. If he starts talking again,
personal experience.
I might come over here, and like you said, you got it. I'm not going to try to talk over him. Depending on how well I know the group, I might say, hey, you want to let us in on stuff that y'all got going on? I might say, sometimes the rest of the audience might appreciate it. This group right here, this is my boot camp in Nashville. This guy right here talked the whole time. Well, you know, and you know what I do, and you know, what about this and what about that? First, you're polite, because you don't know, you know, I mean, okay, he has a question, no big deal. Then you get to where, make up a name. Hey, Joe, I'll take questions, and we'll have Q&A and comments at the break. Is that okay? But this guy just kept going. So... oh, were you in that room? What did I do from your perspective?
I thought you handled it really well, actually, because you know, you do a lot of these types of conferences, and I would say that you have that guy. I mean, that's not
right.
The first time that's happened.
No, listen.
And I've sat in a lot of conferences, and I'm like, yeah, you've always got like that guy in there. I thought you did it really well.
They probably need to know what I did. I don't even know everything that I did, but
well,
you were there, you were watching.
Everything you did, but I thought you handled it really well. You would always, the first few times, you know, you answer his questions, but you never let him go on.
Right.
Like, you could tell, like, if I let this guy go.
Right.
A, we'll run out of time.
Right.
And but he was super annoying to begin with.
Right.
But then he calmed down. Like after you kind of told him, hey, we're gonna get to that at some other point or whatever. But yeah, I specifically remember that guy. I'm like, I wish that guy would shut up.
Yeah.
And you handled it really, really well.
So in the beginning you're polite. And then you start saying, listen, we'll get to that, or let's talk about that on the break, or we'll do Q&A. And then you just start ignoring them. Like, I didn't even hear you.
Yeah. If you did get to that point.
Yeah.
And
they just shut up. He just wants attention. Eric told me later on, he said that guy was at Chuck Violin's business planning event. He told me that he just almost destroyed that event. Like, apparently whoever was facilitated didn't...
He was at his summit, yeah.
You're going to have that. You're going to have people in your audience that know more than you.
Yep.
They think that they should be on the stage, not you. They don't want you to be up there. It's usually only... A person or two, so it's not something you have to worry about a lot, but it's going to happen.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Does it have to be the speaker who engages with that person? In other words, if she's speaking and I'm there with her, can I run interference on her behalf, or is it better just...
like the bouncer?
Yeah, I mean, especially like if you have people there,
mm-hmm.
Like I might slip around to Austin and, you know, turn my mic off and say, hey, can you tell that guy to shut up?
That's right, you're in charge.
You know what I mean?
How would you handle that, Austin?
That takes training.
Yeah. That takes training. Yes, sir.
Do you have one of your people talk to them as a break, or like you would do with a child?
Sit next to them the next time. So, because what you said is they want attention. So
yeah.
So with the logo gave them that attention.
Yeah. So Santiago does my dirty work normally.
He's good at it.
He's so good at it. We fired somebody during a conference one time. A team member.
In front of everybody?
We'll remember that. I know. And like, I'm looking straight at them, you know, like. I didn't mean to do that. I just thought you might be interested in that fact. No, he took her. He took her. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. We're better at hiring people now. Let me put it that way. Okay. So, you know, he took her out in the hallway and I said, so how'd it go? He said, I let her go. I said, good for you.
At Discover Softwash, you get a lot of people that are there, somewhere between 20 to 25 people in that group. Mm-hmm. And there's usually that one guy, like you're talking about, that has got all the experiences, who was a pressure washer before, and he's gonna tell you everything that you're doing wrong and how softwash doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So part of the pre-event training is AJ, who's AC's son, AC Lockyer, that's softwash system that you were talking a little bit about there, he's already prepped for it. He already knows. Yeah. If that guy starts to hold court while the instructor's talking, and five or six people are kind of gravitating around that individual, AJ will go over and break that up. Because that one individual's pulling five or six other people away from the training, the event that's going on, and distracting everybody else. So
I mean, you could even, you could even escort him out of the room. Have Santiago or Austin say, hey, can I see you for a second? Bring him out in the hallway. Say, listen, we appreciate the fact that you want to, you know, participate. But, you know, it's getting a little bit distracting. And, you know, we have an agenda that, you know, material we need to get through. We'd be happy to talk to you on the break. I mean, if you want to stay out here and talk to me, I'm happy to sit with you. You know, what's on your mind? You got to deal with it because the people in your audience are expecting you to deal with it. And the only reason that I would even want to be 80 is so I can just say whatever I want. When I'm 80, I'll be like, T.
Right there is
enough. I didn't look at you. I looked over here where there is nobody. Like, I got a video for you to watch. It's on coaching. It's a Bob Newhart episode. And the title of it is Stop It.
But one thing, Howard, is I think if you're going to have events and stuff, you also have to be aware of what culture you are inadvertently accepting by allowing team members to congregate at the back of the room, just for an example, because now what you're basically saying is interrupting is fine.
Yeah, so we have that issue sometimes, especially when my wife is in the room. She'll be back there chit-chatting with, you know, and what are our team members going to do?
Chit-chat with her.
Yeah, so, and then if you ask her to go, this is not on tape, by the way. If you ask her to step out, well, no, I want to hear what's going on. You can't hear what's going on. You can't hear when you're talking. Anyway, I love my wife. She's Italian. I've been married 38 years. I know that some people might be disappointed to find that out, but, you know, I'll still give you a kiss.
You said it right, though. You have to take care of those situations.
You have to.
Everybody in that room is distracted.
Yep.
That guy's interrupted.
Yep.
Like,
and
came there for a
Yeah. And to Sherry's point, if you're on the back row and you got team members back there chit-chatting, it's distracting. You got to take care of it. People asking, oh, people sleeping. What do you do about that one? Everybody up. Okay. You know, it's time for... It's time for some Tang Soo Do, okay? Look, Michelle, stand up. Come on, stand up. Let's go. She's ready. Nobody's sleeping in here. Come on, Austin. Show us a couple things. All right, just a little something, something. All right, so what's the stance for a Tang Soo Do? Now, I learned a little bit about Taekwondo. I don't remember any of it, but I learned it. Now we got Tang Soo Do. Come on up here. Give Austin a big hand clap. Remind me when he's done how to stay awake during a conference. Because sometimes, I mean, like, I don't know about you, but certain time of the day comes and I'm just like, I don't care if, you know, most exciting speaker on the stage, I mean, I'm just like out of it. I'm brand new. What do I need to know?
So if you're brand new, let's start off. We'll just learn how to make a fist. So everybody go ahead and throw your hands up. And usually we wouldn't start, if we're attacked, we wouldn't go off and just haul off and punch somebody. But let me just show you how to make a fist at first. So we're gonna curl our fingers again. Good, and your thumb's gonna be like the magic piece of tape to hold your fist together on the outside. You never want that on the inside, you always want that on the outside.
That's a good tip.
So we're gonna put those right by our face, put whatever leg you want back, whatever hand you want in front, whatever feels kind of comfortable for you, as long as you're not T-Rex arms out here, in here, as long as you're not out here, anywhere in here should be comfortable.
That's good.
So let's just start off with the jab. So whatever hand you got in front, we're just gonna sling it out.
Boom!
Right in front, there you go, and bring it
back.
There you go, right in front, there you go, awesome. Now try to get your body into it a little so we're not just here. One,
boom!
With our body, yeah, look at that.
Boom!
Nice, can we do a 1-2? 1-2.
Boom, boom!
All right. Look at that. Good job, guys.
Look at that. Look at it. Yay! Yeah. Woo! I was here in Dallas one time. Give it up for awesome Austin. So I was here in Dallas one time, and I was teaching down at Ziegler at the previous facility. And I walked out of the hotel I was staying in. I was just going to walk around and get some exercise, just take a walk. And my friend Bob All walks out. Some of y'all know Bob from the Inner Circle. And he said, "What you doing?" I said, "I'm just taking a walk. What are you doing?" He said, "I'm going down to Walgreens to pick up, you know, something for a shaver or something like that." And I said, "Well, I'll walk with you." So we're walking and talking. And we're walking along, and he says, we get in this conversation. He says, "You know, if you're not running to the devil once in a while, then you might be walking the same direction as him." And I'm just walking. I said, "That's good." And I'm thinking, I ain't running the devil very much, so I mean, maybe I need to repent for something. I don't know. You know, it's like, so I'm just like listening, like this. We get to Walgreens, and he gets what he needs. We witness to the cashier, and we walk out of Walgreens, and we're walking across the parking lot. It's about, you know, 8 o'clock at night at this point. It's starting to get a little dark. And this guy comes walking across the parking lot, which is not unusual in that neighborhood. There's a lot of people walking around. There's tourists and, you know, people from out of town walking from their hotel, walking to a restaurant or whatever. So that's not unusual. He had some headphones on. And he had a backpack, and, you know, he's just walking across the parking lot. And he's walking toward us. And I thought, well, he's getting awfully close. Surely he's going to just, like, go around us. So I'm starting to go around him. Now, Bob, I don't know how old Bob is, but his hair is gray. So I don't know if that has, you know, anyway, he looks older than I do. Probably is older than I am. All of a sudden, this guy, we've never seen this guy, hadn't talked to anybody, just pops Bob right in knows. I found myself in between Bob and this guy that just punched him. I ended up just like this. Hopefully I got my fist right. I was like, and all of a sudden time froze. I was like, what did you just do? I mean, because it was just a reaction. It wasn't, you know, I didn't plan this. Like, I found myself there. It was just a reaction. And I'm just protecting my friend. And then, all of a sudden, this came out of me. I didn't mean to say it. I just did. I said, you stop in the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
Just like that. And the guy went like this, like something hit him. And he goes like this again, like he's going to hit me. And I go, you stop right now in the name of Jesus. And that guy, he looked like he'd been tased. He had dropped his headphones, his backpack, and he stumbled over and grabbed his backpack and went into Walgreens. You all right? Yeah, I'm okay. His nose is bloody. I said, I guess we're not walking the same direction as Satan anymore. Yeah. And then we start laughing about it, you know, like, thanks for the confirmation, God, you know. Yeah. I was like, thanks, Bob. You got hit, almost got killed. You know what people are going to do. Literally, I think this guy was demon-possessed. We had I don't know how I got on the subject, so I'm not going to start telling demon stories now. But anyway, you see how I can get off track? That's how you get back on track. Where were we? Okay. People sleeping. So how do we go from people sleeping to people getting attacked? Huh? Goes hand in hand.
We're not sleeping.
Well, we got
this is...
You were just telling us how to wake people up, and Austin came up, and we were fighting.
Oh, and that reminded me. Oh, and then I told you I was going to tell you how to stay awake, right? This right here is why I wasn't sure if I wanted to do this or not, because this is not exactly classroom style how to do a presentation. Presentation skills, okay? This is Howard style. I was working on a project with... See, you're not supposed to do this, right? You're not supposed to do this. Okay. Be proper Ziegler here. So I was working with a company, big company, $9 billion company. And the guy that we were working with was trying to get the bigwigs from the company, the executives, to come to Las Vegas to meet us. I had like three guys on my team, and it was him and his wife and in that department, and there was about three executives, nine of us in all, if they came. So he calls me, and he says, man, I got great news. I said, what is it? He said, the executives are coming to Las Vegas. And I was like, awesome. And he was like, and we're going to a show. And I said, oh. He said, how did you know? I said, how did I know what? He said, how did you know that we were going to go see the show? Oh. I did it. The reason that I said, oh, is because when I go to the theater, as soon as the lights go out, so do I. And it ain't cool when your wife spent a lot of money on tickets to go to whatever, the Nutcracker, and, you know, watch, you know, mice skate around the stage or whatever, and you fall asleep and you're drooling on some lady's mink coat. I mean, it's just not cool, right? So that's cool. I mean, what are the chances? So, get to Vegas, we have our meetings, and showtime's coming up, and these shows don't start till like 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night. My bedtime's at 9, I mean, preferably 8, you know what I mean? Like, I'm getting ready for bed at 8 o'clock by falling asleep in front of the TV, then I get up, go to bed at 9 o'clock. So I was like, okay, so I get presentation skills. A big cup, venti, Starbucks, and a pocket full of bubble gum and sunflower seeds on this side. To go to a show, right, in Las Vegas. Classy. You know I'm from Lower Alabama, right? Guys, this right here, what's happening right now, was worth doing this whole thing. I have never seen Beverly laugh like that, ever. So I told my buddy, who sat next to me, I made sure that the executives went first. Go ahead. Everybody go ahead. So that I would be on the opposite end of the row from the executives in case I fell asleep. And I told my buddy, I said, look, if I start dozing, I don't care what you have to do. I don't want to blow this deal for everybody. You can hit me in the face if you have to. And then I discovered something. I discovered that if I clap real hard, I stayed awake. So every scene, whether it's good or not. So if you ever want to stay awake, or you ever want to keep your audience awake, just have them clap a lot. Okay? So you ready? Ready? Okay, here we go. Give it up for Anita. Give it up for Chris. Give it up for Beverly. Give it up for Austin. Give it up for Tanya. Give it up for Andy. Give it up for all these people who are going to be watching this crazy thing on video in the future. Give it up for Michelle Thomas, your favorite CPA. .com. Give it up for Sherry Perry. Give it up for Derek. Give it up for Jim. Woo! I never fell asleep. My hands hurt for 4 days, but I didn't fall asleep. Just a little extra thing for you if people are sleeping. If people are sleeping, have them all stand up. Let's clap. Let's move around. Or if you want to be really mean, do this. When people are asleep, even if you don't even move anywhere near them, you just stop. After a while, hopefully, they'll notice that something's different and they'll wake up. Now, I've never had this happen, but I guess it's possible that they would go into deeper sleep and start snoring, okay? And then you got to get them up. You got to say, hey, man, we're about to do an exercise here. Get up. Speaking of people who are sleepy, what do you do when people just ask really, they say that there's no dumb questions? There are. I was doing a class one time, Man, I could write a whole book just on how I started and all these little supply houses and everything. And I was at one of them, and we had this program called, I was telling this story at lunch, we had this program called Pricing for Profits. Now, in Pricing for Profits, I mean, we had spreadsheets, we had, you know, like, you know, your operating costs. I mean, it was like detailed. So here I've been almost 90 minutes on pricing for profits. Every kind of way to look at every kind of cost, every kind of, you know, pricing that you could imagine, like up one side and down the other. You imagine it, we cover it in that program. There was a guy sitting there, there was about 35 people in the room, and he's been sitting there the whole day since the morning, had a cap on, and he's sitting there like this the whole day. Never made a single note. After I've been teaching pricing for profits for almost 90 minutes, he goes, it's like, yes, sir. You have a question? Now, let's say that you have, you know, at least three steps in a process. Like, in this case, it's cleaning, right? So, you know, most people, you know, they pre-vacuum, they pre-condition the carpet, and then they have some kind of extraction. We've got 12 steps, but let's just say that everybody does two or three steps, right? Let's say that it's like this. You're washing your hands and you lather up your hands. That's step one. And then step two is you rinse them off. So pre-spray is like lathering up your hands. Like you don't lather up your hands and not rinse your hands, right? So pre-spray is like lathering up your hands. Extraction is like rinsing them off. So you don't sell one without the other, right? How much I charge for my pre-spray? So that would be like somebody asking, how much do I charge to lather up somebody's hands? But, yeah, but not rinse them off. Like, you want to know how much to charge just for your pre-spray? Just for the lathering, not the rinse? Uh-huh. I said, so how much does it cost you? $5. I said, how much profit do you want to make off of that? He said, $45. I said, then charge $50. Yeah, that's what everybody in the room did. They were like, have y'all ever noticed that human beings do some weird stuff? I mean, the subject came up last night that there are literally people in this world that think that they're dogs. It's called furries. And they run around like dogs and act like dogs. Did you know that? Seriously.
They're doing it in schools.
I heard they were doing it. Kids were doing it. But these were like adults. This is like a thing. Yeah. You see Chris's face. I wish I could. What's that?
I believe it.
You believe it? Anyway, there are dumb questions, and so you need to think about, all right, how am I gonna? I didn't mean to embarrass the guy. It was probably not the right way to handle it. Guess you had to be there. But I mean, in that world, like you said, they're just. I hate to say it, but one of the reasons I'm grateful and thankful to be in other industries is there seems to be more professionals in some of these other industries. Rare to see somebody in a sport coat. Rare to see people dressed professionally. You know, I love them. I'm thankful. I'm grateful. But Yeah. Okay. That's how much we'll say about that. You know, people talking back, we talked about that. People disagreeing with you. I was in the audience one time, not too long ago, and the speaker, who I had been to dinner with, she went to dinner with me and Johan and two other industry people. There was, you know, like six of us at the table. She's great, great person, a little different. And I thought we had rapport. And so she said to do something talking about sending out a letter to let people know you're raising your price. And I was like, I'm not sure I would do that. She started arguing with me right there from the stage. Now, if I was her, I probably would have said something like, something to think about. And let's go on to the next subject. But she got in this, like, argument with me. And I was like, no skin off of my back. I mean, you know, liked you yesterday. Actually, I really do like her. She's a great person. But, you know, if people are disagreeing with you, then you could say something like, there's a lot of ways to look at it.
You can't have an argument if somebody's not willing to have it.
What was it that Ellen Rohr said about you can own your beliefs, or something that you really got a lot out of? What how did that go? Yes, if you argue for your limitations, you get to keep them.
I love that.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
Listen, you could take that and put it something like that. You can do whatever you want to do. You know, my experience has been, now she's dead wrong. I can prove that she is dead wrong. You never want to do that. Maybe she realized that. But if I'm the person on the stage and I'm convinced that this is a good move and someone else says you shouldn't do that, I might be open enough to say, because I want to include everybody in the conversation. I want people to learn. How about this? Instead of us wanting to be right, having to be right, how about if we look at the outcome instead? Like, If I could be wrong and we get a better outcome, I'm willing to be wrong. Tell me more about that. Get her a microphone. Let's talk about this. Oh, I see. Well, okay. Ellen Rohr and I have gotten into some, you know, when we were trying to get on the same page, I learned that one pretty quick, that if you're in the audience, you probably don't want to argue with Ellen. I'm just saying. And you definitely don't want to whine. Was there something else you were going to share about that, Sherry?
No, I mean, I agree. When you're in an audience, you can't, if you let it disintegrate into an argument, it's not of value to anybody. Mm-hmm. You can have a conflict or a disagreement as long as you're not letting it disintegrate into an argument. And sometimes, I love what you said about, you know, being open to hearing it. I'd rather be wrong and have somebody learn from it. I mean, even that kind of a power statement from the lectern is huge with your audience, and the person can make an ass of themselves if they want to.
Yeah.
But you, I think the way that you handled that would have been, you know, perfect, because her experience is her experience, your experience is your experience, yeah. But the whole audience wants to know, and they're going to leave that conversation wondering on both sides of it anyway, so it seems a little bit irresponsible to not do that. So I love how you suggest.
Well, in my, you know, my motivation, when I even gave the feedback, was my motivation was to be helpful. It wasn't to argue with her. It wasn't to like say you're wrong at all. And I think she felt like it was, you know, like, this dude was nice to me yesterday and now he's like trying to upstage me. I mean, that's kind of, I think, how she felt. I apologized to her later on and, you know, we've got, you know, I wouldn't say we're friends, but we've got good rapport.
When you're the person at the front of the room, everybody, whether they're sleeping or falling asleep or whatever, at the end of the day, you have to think about everybody's experience in the room.
Right.
And so your advice on how you handle that with, hey, get a microphone or grab the microphone, that's brilliant.
I
wrote that down.
So again, in that industry, so now you guys are getting a clue of how, you know, why I'm so grateful to do what I do today, because, man, you might want to do what I do, but you don't want to do what I did to do what I do. Long Island, New York, puts you in the scene. Old rundown hotel. I'd agreed to this hotel. And as soon as you walk in, it reeks of cigarette smoke and mildew. The combination of the two, yeah. Ugh. There were cigarette burns in the carpet as you walked down the hallway. And when you came into the meeting room, there were like these big ceiling tiles, you know, like that are about, you know, I don't know, maybe 2.5 feet long and 18 inches wide. You know which ones I'm talking about, right? And they were all watermarked, and a lot of them were Boeing. Like, they were, like, warped. And so I'm teaching, and all of a sudden, one of these ceiling tiles gives way and falls directly on this guy and just drenched him. Like, it was so full of water that it just, like, I mean, this poor guy was, like, you know, wringing the water off of himself, and there was, like, you know, pieces of insulation and, you know, pieces of the broken, you know, ceiling tile all over them. You know, I mean, literally, I think I've seen it all. You know what I mean? And so, what do you do? Well, if something like that happens, or somebody gets hurt, or, you know, at the lunch table, we were talking about this, and Michelle was telling me that she went to the seminar, and some guy had a heart attack in the audience. So, again, you have to show compassion, show concern, address the situation. You know, can somebody go call Austin, call housekeeping, get some towels, let's get this guy dried off. But you still got a program to do. They paid a ticket or they invested their time. So, you know, we can't use any excuses. We can't not demonstrate care for people. And at the same time, we can't use excuses to not deliver. If you don't do anything else, deliver. I don't care what I have to work with. I hired a guy one time, the same group that I was working with in Las Vegas. I had to hire somebody to be the director of the operation. And I hired a guy who's a friend of mine, just a great guy. I just, you know, like most lovable guy you ever seen in your life. And he was the general manager of a company and took it from, a family business and took it from $1 million to like $6 million. And for all I knew, this guy was all that, right? And so he was like the perfect person for this position. But a month goes by and nothing's happening. And I'm sitting there at my desk with him and I was like, why is nothing happening? He's like, I have no tools. So you have no tools? Yeah, they're supposed to be sending me this and that. Because there was a corporate, you know, entity that we were working with that had the agreement with the multi-billion dollar company, yada, yada, yada. Think I might need batteries. Am I going in and out? And he's like, I have no tools. And I said, let me tell you something. I don't know if I said, may I ask you a question or not. I think I said, just let me just tell you something. That was before I became maybe a better coach. I said, if I needed to get out of this room and that door was barricaded and I had to go through that wall right there, I'm going to find some tools. I'm going to find some way. Tell you what, why don't you get me the hand mic and let me...
Yep, transfer.
Yeah. Whatever goes wrong, ceiling tiles, whatever, you got to deliver it. You got to deliver the goods. If for some reason your whole thing gets canceled, then let's figure out how to do a Zoom meeting or something, you know? Deliver.
Ooh.
I like a lavalier mic myself because I can move around. But half the time they want to undress me and run it down my shirt and all that. I hate that. And I hate those, over-the-ear things like, you know, rock stars wear. I ain't trying to be all that. Like, I ain't trying to be, you know, Britney Spears or Beyonce or somebody, you know. I'm just trying to be me. And that thing bugs my glasses. It just, I never can get comfortable with it.
I can hook you back up.
I tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this on it because we're about to go on a break.
Okay.
And if you're trying to hold this and hold this and make gestures, it's not so cool. But if you have a short meeting and you're not using like a, you know, PowerPoint or whatever, you're not having to use a remote, these are awesome because you can do a lot more with these. Treat me like a fool. See, it's not that good, is it? I'm not going to do that anymore. Stop doing that. Now, the wonderful thing about doing a test, like we're going to just try this, low expectations. So you can do dumb stuff like that. Don't sing Elvis. You're not very good. See what you can do with a microphone like this one. Yes or yes. Or yes! See what I mean? Okay, that's not even on the agenda. Questions before we break. I hope that one thing that you have learned today is that you can make a lot of mistakes and still be okay. I'm at a point right now that even with an audience that, I mean, I want to deliver, right? But I don't really care if I fall off the stage. I'll use it. You know what I mean? I don't care if I mess up. I'll use it. Y'all are just looking at me.
No, it's brilliant, Howard, because you've gotten to the place where it's like you said, when you first start off speaking and you're in front of a group of people, you're worried about what they think about you.
Right.
But now you're more worried about, are you delivering?
Yes.
Than what do they care or think about me?
Thank you.
And I think it's really an important place to get to.
Yeah. That's why I appreciated what you said a second ago. Remember, prepare, care, share. I'm just sharing with you. I'm just sharing my experiences with you. I'm just sharing the pain that I've been through, the mistakes that I've made, a few wins along the way. Hopefully will help you on your journey. I know I'm goofy. I know. I mean, that's why my siblings used to call me How Weird. Yes, sir.
I was just going to say, I think that actually makes it better when you own mistakes. It shows a level of confidence, and it's a human being.
Oh. Did y'all hear what he said?
It's really good.
Stand up here, young man. By the way, if you have somebody running a mic and a big audience and people who like to talk, and you know you got an agenda, you got to be on time, don't let them hold the mic. Share what you just shared.
I like when you own the mistakes you make because it shows a level of confidence and it shows that you're a human being. Like you said, the lady that you called out on stage, she got extremely defensive, and that shows a lack of confidence when you get extra defensive instead of hearing their side of the story or just, yeah, you know, that's a great point, or asking why. I really think that makes it better. Just showing, yeah, I screwed up, I'm a human being, but you have the confidence to overcome it and continue your speech. So
give this young man a big clap. Woo! Man, listen. Superstar in the making right there. Confidence. I want you to, I'm going to get to you, honey. Okay. All right. What does the very first slide say? Go back to page one. What does the very first slide say?
So you can deliver your message with confidence.
Yeah. So that you can deliver your message. Your message is important. Your message matters. That's what Michelle is going to be harping on the next 2 days. It matters. People have problems. You have the solutions. You can show them how to have the results. I know that. I know our stuff works. I know that people need it. And sometimes you mess up on purpose. This is a little secret. Don't tell anybody. But they need to see that you're human. Oh, he thinks he's all that, huh? Confidence. And I love what you just said a second ago, and that is that if she had of asked she could have said, I could see Ellen Rohr doing this. I could see Ellen going, now that's interesting. Why would you say that? You know, I just learned something. Never occurred to me. That's what I would say. By the way, the reason you don't want to do that, send a letter out to your customers saying we're raising prices. Unless they're on like a regular monthly billing or something like that where you have to. Oh, they're raising prices? Okay, well, perfect opportunity to try this other person I've been thinking about. No, you let them call in. When we had to double our prices overnight to get out of debt and to make a profit, think about a customer, a client calling us up and saying, yeah, I need to get my stuff done again. Same thing as last time. It's just routine, right? And last time it was $200, and this time it's going to be $400. It's not an easy conversation, but I can guarantee you if you sent out a letter and told them, you wouldn't even get the phone call. So we said, great, let me give you the current rate on that. Current rate, did you guys, you know, did you go change your pricing or, you know, whatever they would say. And our script was, I created it and I said, and back then I was doing a lot of the sales myself. And I said, we did some business planning and realized that we cannot, watch the wording, we cannot continue to deliver the customer experience that you have become accustomed to and still make a profit and grow our business. I hope you understand. Some people said, I always thought you guys charged too little anyway. That's the kind of clients you want. Some said, well, I don't like this one bit, but I need it done. I can't guarantee that I'm going to call you next time. I totally understand. Some people said, no way, Jose, and they went and tried somebody else, and then they came back because that other company could not deliver the service experience that they had become accustomed to. Make sense? That's why you shouldn't do that. Tanya, you had a question, ma'am?
One of the things you said earlier.
Can I get you to stand up and address the group, please? And just for demonstration purposes, I'm going to hold the mic just so I can show these guys how that works. Because otherwise, Tanya wouldn't do this, but somebody in your audience, like, you know, they'll just take it and then they'll start doing Q&A. They'll take over your room. Ma'am.
One of the things you said earlier was Zig Ziglar's, one of his regrets was that he didn't really get to hear everybody's story. So eventually you're going to come down off the stage. And I saw it at conference. Everybody would have liked to have 15, 20 minutes with you. Mm-hmm. How do you begin to handle that so that people feel loved, cared about, looked at, but you can't possibly get to everybody in the room?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that question. What I would like to do, what I would like to implement at our conferences, Austin, write this down. You ever go to a church and they have like a greeting line? Or you go to a wedding and they have a greeting line? Mm-hmm. I like to have a greeting line. Right by the selfie station, we get a picture together. That's what I'd like to do. When I go to, I mean, it has always been my goal to touch everybody in that room. It's getting more difficult. You know, we're growing, which is wonderful, and we're about to grow big. But that's always my goal, is that every single person in that room gets a pat on the back, gets a hug, gets a hand clap, maybe even a kiss for this guy over here. You're welcome. You thought you never thought you'd get three kisses from me, did you? Oh, they're Howard kisses now. Yeah, so it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a good thing because even though it shouldn't be this way, it is. Human beings, when they can't have something, they want it even more. But I'm not playing that game. I used to have as one of my goals to be a number one New York Times best-selling author. And I erased that goal. That is not my goal. My goal is to be the best author I can be, to be the best friend, to be the best husband, to be the best father, to be the best papa, be the best business owner, be the best presenter. Because, you know, I have, you know, I watch these guys. John Maxwell is on more airplanes, even though it's a beautiful little Phenom 100 jet. It's private. He's on more flights than I'd like to be on. My goal, my vision, is to build a worldwide community, not for me, not so that I can be recognized as a best-selling author, just the opposite. So I don't have to go anywhere. I can do the thing that John Maxwell wants the most. I've heard him say it more than one time that, man, if I could just have a day to be a bum. He said that. I just want to be a beach bum. But I want to help people. I want to see this community spread far and wide, not for me, but for the business owners and their teams and their families, for our kids, for our culture. Not for me. I'm good. I don't even have to do any of this. I really don't. My son said not too long ago, I was traveling a lot, and he said, Dad, you're addicted to traveling. Why are you traveling so much? I said, I'm not addicted to traveling. I hate traveling. I'm addicted to helping people. Period. There's so much hurt in this world. There's so much confusion. Our culture is literally killing our kids. And business owners that could be spending time with their family and growing teams and making their team's dreams come true or helping them with their problems. Instead of slaving away, charging too little and going in debt on top of it. They just don't know what the opportunities are. That's what we have to help them with. I probably shouldn't tell you this, but just to drive the point home that this is what it's about. I hired a new salesperson for locally to network and everything, and we had a lunch for my wife was going to lunch with our bookkeeper. It was her birthday, and our inside sales person, Marianne, was coming. Our referral marketing rep was coming, and we have an intern that at our service company that was coming. And ordinarily, I wouldn't go to that. I love you, but I'm probably not going to be at that lunch. But I wanted my new person who's working locally, is probably going to work out of that office some, to meet them. So I said, okay, I want Heather to come. I'll come. And, you know, we're going to have a phenomenal lunch with what? My wife, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ladies and me. We're going to have fun. I'm going to love on those girls, encourage them. And I wasn't seated very long until I realized that one of them was not in a jolly mood, and I had forgotten that her mother was going through surgery and this and that, and she was almost in tears. And I asked her, I said, what's the matter? She said, well, they're releasing my mother tomorrow, and we have no place to put her. And they want to put her like 2 hours away and this and that. And it's going to cost X number of dollars per month that we don't have. Now, the truth is, don't put that on tape. But I'm not going to use that as an excuse not to help her. So immediately I said, Denise, call this. We have somebody, a friend in that business. You know, let's get the thing going because this is happening like Sunday. And find a place for her. How much is it going to cost? And I wrote her a check. I mean, if I can spend several thousand dollars restoring my pool, why can't I give somebody several thousand dollars to take care of her mother who's dying? That's what it's about. That's what it's about. So if I have to travel to make that happen, I was thinking about, you know, if I ever get sick, like if I ever got sick, cancer, whatever. I mean, I've lived a great life. I don't want to go through all that. I don't know how that came into my mind. It just did. And I was talking to another lady that I hired not too long ago to help me get my Monday Morning Christian book launched. And she was telling me about her mother who died of cancer and decided not to do treatment. And I thought, this is an interesting coincidence. So tell me more about that. Well, obviously people have the right to do that. But she felt like it was selfish of her mother to not go through treatment and be there for her and her grandkids and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I said, well, you know, Lord probably speaking through you because I don't know. I mean, I just had that thought and then here she is talking about it. I mean, I don't know if I don't think anything's wrong with me. I mean, I'll find out soon, but, you know, I'll get a checkup very soon. But it just reminded me that it's not about us. So what if I had to, you know, go through some pain to be here? For the people I love, people I'm called to. I'll finish with this story. I called on the Zig Ziglar Corporation. I was here in Dallas to do a presentation, small group. And I had met Zig about, you know, 5 years prior at a big event. That was this big, huge, you know, those big, huge, like, get motivated events, success events. And they Zig gave away a package and, you know, they have the big, like, you know, barrel of tickets that they turn and, you know, there's thousands of, well, there's 20,000 people in here, but there's like, you know, a couple thousand people in the VIP section on the floor right there. And these are all tickets that they got and somebody's going to win this package, right? So Zig, you know, he shows them the package and tells them all about testimonials. He didn't tell them about what's in the product. You know, he didn't go into that. He's like, so-and-so got these tapes and it helped them in this area and they reached their goals and they did this and that. So he shares the package. And then what's supposed to happen is the MC of the event is supposed to come out and say, we're going to go on break. And you can find Mr. Ziglar's table and get this product. Because what happens, by the way, we're going to do offers here in just a minute. You give away a package to seed the audience because it increases the desire level of the people in the audience. Man, I want that. I want those results. I want that package. I hope I win. Now, one lady out of 20,000 people comes running down with the winning ticket. Woo-hoo! She gets the package. The MC is supposed to say, here's where you get the package. I wasn't even in that business at the time. Maybe I was just starting up. I don't remember, but I don't think I'd even started. Maybe I was 3 years into it. And the lights came up, and there was 20,000 people standing there wondering what to do. Guess I'll go to the restroom. I knew what happened. I didn't even know the game yet, but I knew enough about the game to know somebody just made a huge mistake. Later on, years later, I was talking to Tom about it. He said, man, that happened all the time over there. For whatever reason. So I looked at Jim Bardwell, and I said, I'm going to find Zig Ziglar. And I started walking around the Toyota Center, walking the halls of the Toyota Center, those big, wide hallways, and I see this long, L-shaped table. Like, it was like from there all the way to here, full of product, manned by about 14 Mary Kay representatives. Mary Kay and Ziegler had a close relationship, and they would get to go to the seminars free in exchange for being able to, and they'd probably get some product or whatever in exchange for serving. And, you know, you go pay for the product, you get the product, then you meet Zig. That was the greeting line right there, right? There's about five people at this table, and there's 20,000 people in there. I wanted to run back in the arena and get a microphone and say, "Hey, Zig Ziglar's over here." Of course, that's impossible. So I got to meet Zig Ziglar. He has granddaughter with him, not Alexandra, Catherine. And, man, that's all he talked about was his granddaughter, his granddaughter, his granddaughter, his granddaughter. And just, like, went on and on. And I was like, "No, nice to meet you." Got a picture with him. And Brian Flanagan, who was their salesman. And, by the way, Zig was either oblivious to what happened, but there's no way that he could not know what just happened. You would have never known. He was... just as happy and joyful and jovial. Like, if he didn't know about it, he didn't pay any attention to it at all. But Brian Flanagan, sales manager, see, this is what you can't do with one of these microphones. He's over there like white as a ghost. Like, we got to ship like 12 pallets of product back to the office. I mean, that's thousands of dollars. So I went up after I met Zig, got a picture with him and everything. A couple other people walked up, wanted to meet Zig. I went over to Brian, introduced myself, and I asked him, you know, who he was, what he does. And it's like, I'm the sales manager. Okay, I get it, you know. I said, "So how could I build a relationship with Ziglar?" He said, You could buy some Ziglar product and become a Ziglar distributor." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I get it." You know what happened next? For 5 years. 5 years. "Oh, yeah, one of these days, FTI, one of these days, I'm going to call Zig Ziglar Corporation. One of these days, next time I go to Dallas, come back. Oh, yeah, I never called on them. I forget, man, I need to call Zig Ziglar." And one day, I was on my way to Dallas to do this presentation, and I called the Ziglar office, got Michael. I said, "Hey, I met Brian a few years ago. Need to, you know, I want to come in and talk about purchasing some product and what have you." He said, "Well, you got to talk to Margaret." I said, "Okay. She's not in right now. Leave your phone number. She'll return the call." So I get done with my presentation and check my voicemail. She said, it was Friday, by the way, and she said, "I can see you at 3:00, but not any later than that. You know, I'm going to be leaving the office." And I'm like, it's like 2:30. Call her up. Can you see me?" She said, "Yeah, I'll be here. Just need to get on your way over here." I said, "Okay." I didn't even have a car. So my host that I was speaking for, they threw me in the car, took me down there. And I bought a bunch of product and met Tom. And while I was buying the product, when I was interested in the product, she goes, "Well, you know, if you purchase $25,000 worth of product, Mr. Ziglar will come and speak to your audience." Now, at that time, he was getting $100,000 for a speech. And I said, "Run that by me again." You mean Zig Ziglar will come and speak at my conference in Houston at no additional charge if I buy $25,000 worth of product? I said, yep. Now, I didn't know this, but he had recently fallen down the stairs and he was suffering from short-term memory issues. So this was not the same Zig Ziglar that I knew, that I had seen and that I knew. And she said, you need to know that. I said, I didn't say this, but I thought this. I don't care if they bring him in on a stretcher. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care what condition he's in. I don't care if I have to carry him in the building. Zig Ziglar's going to be at my conference, right? And I get $25,000 worth of product wholesale. So I said, we're having a conference. This is like March. I said, we're having a conference next month. And Tom, I was talking to Tom about this. He said he can't make it because he's got to have surgery because of his fall and this and that. So we booked it for November. And I said, look, how about this? How about if I come back to Dallas before my conference next month, we'll do a video together. And that way I can show the video. Everybody will be excited about coming back in October, November. It's November. Everybody will be excited about coming back in November. And I can sell some of this product. Great idea. So I go back to Dallas. And me and Tom and Zig. Tom didn't know me yet. So Tom sat in the middle between us, you know, like. You know, he wasn't sure either at that point in time, but hey, $25,000 sale, you know? And so I'm interviewing Zig and ask him this question. I said, you've had a phenomenally successful career. I know that you don't need to be sitting here doing this interview with me and coming to my event. Aren't there more pleasurable things that you could be doing right now? I mean, I know you have a lake house nearby and you and the redhead like to go to this lake house. Aren't there more pleasurable things that you could be doing right now? And I will never forget. I'll never forget his response. He said, well, there might be more pleasurable things, but there are a few things that are as important. That's what it's about. It's not about just having a purpose, but it's when that purpose gets you, that's where it's at. He knew that if I can just plant a few more seeds, if I can help this man that I don't even know just get the message out, because he loves sharing the message. I mean, he just loved sharing the message. I can go sit at my lake house anytime. But maybe I'm not going to be able to do this forever. So the point is, landing the plane, understand why you're in front of this group of people. Understand what it is you're trying to help them do. Understand your purpose. Don't worry about you. Don't worry about, you know, I mean, after Zig fell down the stairs, I mean, they had a real problem, you know. I mean, he wasn't able to move around the stage and inspire an audience. He forgot what he told you 5 minutes ago. He remembered all the stories, all the things that happened in the past. He had, you know, recorded all that in his mind, and he had the script, and he knew all that stuff. But he forgot what happened 5 minutes ago. So he would tend to repeat himself. So they decided not everybody in the company was for this, but they decided that instead of retiring him, they would do like an interview format. And now when I interviewed him, he was still, you know, with it quite a bit. Surgery, a few more months go by, November, and, you know, and Tom and Julie came with him, and Julie took the stage with him and interviewed him. They sat down, and she would ask him questions, and he would repeat himself. And so he would say the same thing that he just said a few minutes ago. And she said, well, Daddy, you already told him that. But the wit that he still had, he said, because he knew he had a problem, right? He said, yeah, but those two guys right there on the front row, they weren't listening too good. I mean, he still had that wit. I don't care if I have to be drug on the stage. I don't care if I fall off the stage. I don't care about any of that stuff. All I care about is the mission. All I care about is the purpose. All I care about is that I get the message out that I'm supposed to get out to the people I'm supposed to get it to. That's it. And that is my call to action to you. Is yes, use these techniques, learn the craft, be the best you can be at the craft, but never forget what it's about. It's about impacting lives. It's about helping people. It's about solving problems for people. It's not about the money. It's not about fame. It's not about being on the stage. It's not about your book or your seminar. Any of that. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the people we're serving. Yes or yes? Okay.